You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Monday, August 13th, 2018. I am your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. If you like the show, subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify and leave the show a good review in iTunes. Well, folks, I survived a harrowing journey to bring you this show today. I was in Richmond yesterday for the first of three joint practices the Jets will have with the Washington Redskins. And near the end of the practice, it started to rain a little bit, and then the rain started picking up. It started absolutely pouring, and they actually called practice a little bit early. Now, I'm tough. Like, I did not run away. You know, there were some people that ran into tents. A lot of people were leaving the facilities. Not Jets fans, by the way. It seemed like it was mostly Redskins fans who were leaving. The Jets fans who were there in green were great all day. I mean, there was actually a surprising number of Jets fans considering it was Richmond, Virginia. We heard some JETS chants. But I was fine. I think there was lightning in the area, so they called the practice. So I get on the road, and I'm traveling up 95, and the skies have really started to open up, and I see like water flying up from the road. It seems like the highway is flooded, and I mean, we're getting to the point where I'm thinking, man, am I gonna have to build an arc here? So I can barely see in front of me, so I just get off at the nearest exit I can to try and regroup. And then I run into a Wawa, which is great. I love Wawa. Great sandwiches. So I stop in there, and I'm still wet, but which is fine because, again, I'm tough. But I go in there, and I get a Thanksgiving sandwich where it's hot turkey and gravy, stuffing, and cranberry sauce. Delicious, tremendous sandwich. And then I start checking my phone. I check the Weather Channel app on my phone. And it's still raining pretty hard. I'm probably about a half hour away from just finding some hotel in whatever the heck town I'm in Virginia. And the Weather Channel app is telling me that there's this huge thunderstorm over me. Only the rain's starting to let up a little bit. And eventually it's only a drizzle. So even though the Weather Channel is telling me that there's a thunderstorm on me and there's a thunderstorm on my route, I'm saying, well, let's see how this goes. So I start taking off, and the rain lessens, and eventually it stops, and I make it back. So, after this harrowing journey, I'm back to present you the Locked On Jets podcast today. I guess the moral of that story is Wawa good, Weather Channel app bad, and with my luck, the Weather Channel is probably negotiating some deal with the Locked On Podcast Network to become a sponsor, so I'll need to do a retraction tomorrow or something. But it was a good day in Richmond yesterday, and I'll tell you, I actually learned something. I really did learn something, and I've been asked many times, in a couple of mailbags we've done over the last year or so, what the benefits are of doing a joint practice where you practice with another team. And I had always said, really, I couldn't see a whole lot. I did not think it was a big deal. And in fairness, it's not a big deal in the sense that it's not going to be the difference between a team going 11-5 and 5-11. But just from being there yesterday, I really started to see the wisdom in scheduling a joint practice because, we're, 3 weeks or so into training camp. After 3 weeks of doing the same thing virtually every day, you go to your team facility, you're practicing against your teammates, you're hitting guys in green and white. Now, I understand first preseason game was Friday, so you at least got a little game action, but, you're hitting the same guys over and over, guys that, are on your team, who you're counting on that year, probably guys who are your friends. You do a joint practice in Richmond if you're the Jets. You change the venue, you provide a little bit of a different perspective, you're going up against different players, different competition. Livens things up a little bit, and I would never say that the Jets practices in Florham Park are low intensity, but there definitely was a little extra layer of intensity to this practice yesterday. And if you've read about the practice, you probably saw that there was a big fight that broke out at one point there was a lot of feistiness, especially between the Jets defense and the Redskins offense. They were working on a couple different fields. One field typically had the Jets offense and the Redskins defense, and the other field had the Redskins offense and the Jets defense. So lots of feistiness there. I think it also gives coaches a chance to evaluate their players a little bit. That wide receiver who's having a great camp, is he having a great camp because he's playing well, or is there a little element that your team's corners aren't that great, your team's backup corners aren't that great? Now, granted, the team you're practicing against, their corners may also stink, but it's at least another chance to add a layer of evaluation. And yeah, I thought the practice was very intensity, I think, is the word I would say. And you know, there was one big fight, and then a couple little skirmishes that, you know, could have escalated but did not. And you know, I'm not a big fan of fights in training camp typically if it's just your team, and they happen. Look, they happen. Tempers flare. The weather gets hot, and you probably get tired of going against the same guy over and over and over every day. You know, you'd like to see them avoided when it's just your team. I also don't like fights in games because they're costly. You get dumb 15-yard penalties, get players kicked out of games. I mean, remember that game a couple of years ago when Muhammad Wilkerson got ejected in the second half in Green Bay? But in this situation, you know, a training camp practice against another team, I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's the type of thing that, you know, maybe brings the team together a little bit. You know, everybody's bonding a little bit over that. So, you know, not a big deal. And I think that this is actually going to be a pretty intense preseason. This game a little later this week is going to be more intense than your typical preseason game because these teams are practicing together. They practiced together yesterday, which was pretty intense, and they have two more practices before this game. So I think that this preseason game actually might be as close in the NFL as you'll get to like one of those play, if you're a hockey fan, one of those playoffs, one of those Stanley Cup playoff series where teams are physically battling every night and you get tired of the other guy and the, you know, same guy's constantly going at you. You develop a real animosity towards him. I mean, these teams will have practiced three times by the time they take the field later this week. So it should be a pretty entertaining preseason game, something to look forward to. And it's like I said, I gained a new appreciation for the idea of the joint practice. You know, it's something that adds a little life to preseason, something that, you know, breaks the routine a little bit, breaks the monotony of training camp. So, you know, it's something that kind of grew on me a little bit, having watched that practice yesterday. Now, I was at practice all last week. I think that'll probably be my last trip to training camp, just my personal schedule. Won't allow anything more, but, you know, good practice to check out. Anyway, as great as training camp practices to talk about, since the last time we met, the Jets actually played a football game. They played their first preseason game. It was against the Atlanta Falcons, and the Jets won 17-0. And we'll get to more in-depth analysis of the game tomorrow, but I think everybody wants to talk about the quarterbacks. I think that's the focus. We'll talk about some of the other stuff on tomorrow's show. We'll go a little deeper into the game tomorrow. And I think from the quarterback perspective, it could not have been a better night for the Jets. Now, McCown played one series, which I'm not expecting to see much of him in this preseason. We did not see much of him last year. In fact, the Jets sat him out the entire second and third games, and I would not be surprised. I'll go beyond that. It's not only would I not be surprised to see Sam Darnold start the second game, I'd be surprised if he did not start the second game, because it's easy to forget this, but the Jets gave Christian Hackenberg every chance to win that starting job last year, and they started him the second game. They started him the third game in preseason. So I would expect the same thing with Darnold. I think the Jets would love for Darnold to claim this starting job. And he went a long way toward claiming that starting job, I think, on Friday night. You know, not a spectacular game on the stat sheet, but as I always say, you have to take quarterback. It's not that quarterback stats are meaningless, but they don't always tell the full story. And you know what's funny is I had a viewpoint, and I'm a little surprised that it's not a more con. I don't think I've heard anybody else say this. And it's that it's not just that I thought Darnold took a step toward earning the starting job on Friday night. It's not just that, you know, he looked good on Friday night. I actually thought he was the best of the three Jets quarterbacks on Friday night. Now, I know, again, McCown did not play much, so McCown barely even factors in our judgment. But I really thought, I thought Darnold was the best quarterback of the three. And that's not taking anything away from Teddy Bridgewater, because I thought Teddy Bridgewater was also excellent. But I go play by play. You know, I go play by play. And what I try and do is I consider what could the quarterback have done on that play, and what did he do on that play? And on almost all the plays, I felt like Sam Darnold did everything within his power to make it successful. Now, again, it was not a particularly impressive showing statistically, and that's because things, you know, fell back a little bit in the second half, and he only threw for 96 yards on 18 attempts. So that's not that great. That's only 5.3 per attempt. That's almost Hackenberg-ish. But while Hackenberg's yards per attempt, his terrible yards per attempt last year, was an indication of how he played, Darnold's was not. And there were instances where Darnold was let down by his receivers some. There was one play I wasn't quite sure of. He tried to throw back shoulder to Charles Johnson on the drive that turned into a touchdown eventually. I don't think it did. But there was one time he tried to go back shoulder to Charles Johnson, because I think that was a third down play. So that was not the drive where they scored, where Darnold led them to the touchdown. But I thought, I mean, it was a good decision. I mean, the only throw that was there was the back shoulder. I thought Johnson, it's impossible to judge based on the angles we saw, but and even then, there's a lot of subjectivity when we're talking about how a receiver's tracking the ball. But I did not think Johnson tracked that ball well. Certainly, there was a play in the second half where he put the ball on the money to Ardarius Stewart. He put it right in a spot where Stewart could get it. If Stewart shows stronger hands, that's a catch. And then there was a deep ball to Trenton Cannon where, again, it looked like Cannon just did not track the ball very well. But, you know, you look at why I think Darnold played better than Bridgewater was just the degree of difficulty on the plays he had to make. And again, you know, some of it just comes down to his receiver. His receivers did not give him much of a chance, but he still gave the receivers did not put him in a position to succeed, yet he still gave the receiver a chance to make a play. And the receiver didn't make the play, so that hurt him on the stat sheet. But just that's what I go back to, is the degree of difficulty. And then the touchdown, you know, the touchdown throw to Charles Johnson was just a thing of beauty, where he kind of broke from the pocket. He saw daylight in front of him, and he made it happen on what was kind of a broken play. And one distinction I always try and make is there's a difference between a scrambler and a mobile quarterback. A scrambler takes off, tucks the ball under, and runs at the first sign of daylight. A mobile quarterback uses his legs to extend play and buy himself extra time to make a big play through the air. And yes, if nothing's there and there's a running lane, then he'll tuck it. But his first option is always to try and throw the ball. And that's what Darnold did. Darnold extended the play after nothing was there originally. He ran a little bit to his right, and then he hit Johnson, who would kind of broke his route a little bit. And that kind of shows you what Darnold's about. Is Darnold's not going to be just a pure pocket guy like a Brady. He's going to be a guy who's going to play some schoolyard football the way Rodgers does, the way Roethlisberger does. So it's something for the Jets to think about going forward, the type of receivers you invest in, and receivers who, you know, can play schoolyard football, know when to break their routes, have kind of a good connection with Darnold doing things like that. And Darnold's still going to play from the pocket. He still made a lot of very impressive plays from the pocket, I thought. But that's just the type of play that I think set Darnold apart from Bridgewater, because I'm not saying Bridgewater can never make that play, but I don't think Bridgewater will make it on the consistent basis Darnold will. And, I mean, there are just other little things where the offensive line was not playing particularly well. You know, instances where maybe a lineman blew his block, Darnold was sliding in the pocket while he's showing those skills from within the pocket, things that you really like to see. And that's, this is a distinction I draw, is there's one thing, it's one thing when the pocket's messy where, like, one guy blows his block, but all the quarterback has to do is step up or slide in the pocket a little bit, and he's fine. And then there's plays where the pocket disintegrates, where three guys blow their block. And I think that's a distinction that does not get made enough when we talk about young quarterbacks. And, you know, last year when we were dealing with Hackenberg, and this is just something I go back to, I can't help but compare Darnold to Hackenberg, just because Hackenberg was the latest Jets quarterback of the future, quote-unquote. I'm not sure whether he actually ever was a serious contender to be the quarterback of the future. But Hackenberg just was a deer in headlights in the pocket, and he could not deal with a messy pocket. If one guy blew his block, he would step right into a sack. And that's just something you can't do. And people would say, well, no quarterback could live with protection like that. Well, the truth was that good quarterbacks could, because good quarterbacks know how to maneuver in the pocket. And if, you know, you just have to beat one guy, again, sometimes you just have to step up or slide and the pressure is gone. And that's what we saw from Darnold a few times on Friday night. Now, there was one time when the pocket disintegrated where, I mean, you know, like pretty much everybody lost their block off the snap and he took a sack there. And look, that's where there's nothing you can do. But overall, I think a very impressive night from Darnold. And really the only throw I can put fault on him, it was funny because he got blamed for a number of throws, which I ended up not agreeing with. And then there was one throw, it was near the goal line. It was a drop by Charles Johnson where everybody got on Johnson. And I thought that was actually the one thing I did not love from Darnold, because I just thought he put too much mustard on the ball. I didn't think he threw a very, I didn't think the throw was catchable enough. And it just came out too hot. And yeah, Johnson could have had it, but I did not like that throw. But aside from that, I think, you know, judging what could Darnold have done on this play versus what he actually did, what was there for Darnold to do, he came out quite well. And in many instances, he made something happen where nothing was there. There was no obvious play to be made. He figured out a way to make something happen. And one person I know on the website, Gang Green Nation, mentioned that when you get quarterback play like that, it kind of shines a light when you don't have the receivers you need. And Darnold was playing with second and, you know, third team receivers out there, and, you know, Stewart made the one couldn't come up with the one ball. It really does kind of shine a light on that. It's one thing when you got Hackenberg and Petty out there where, you know, the throw can be erratic or something like that. It just does, you don't see it. Maybe you blame the quarterback a little bit, but when you have a quarterback like that, it does kind of show when the receiver doesn't do his job. Now, I'm not ready to give Darnold the starting job just yet. This was one game on top of a number of good practices, and now he's going to have to do it. Yes, he was playing with second, third team offense, but he also was playing against backups on defense. He was not playing against high-caliber NFL players on defense. So the talent level will go up when the Jets start giving him some first-team reps in these preseason games, but so far, what we've seen suggests that he is on track to win the starting. I'm not ready to give it to him just yet, but I think he's on track to win the starting job. Now let's talk Teddy Bridgewater, who really had a very good game against Atlanta. His final stat line was 7 for 8, 85 yards, and a touchdown. And I mean, I think Teddy made all the right decisions. Now, he's not a guy who's going to go out there and make plays the way Darnold is. What you're going to get in Teddy is a guy who, am I going to use the phrase game manager, because it has such a negative connotation? But Teddy's going to go out there and take what the defense gives him, and certainly did a good job of that. Played very efficient football, and he's not going to go out there and make a ton of plays on his own the way Darnold did. The Darnold touchdown where Darnold's moving to his right when nobody's open, and you know, Bridgewater's going to hit the open guy, move the chains, and he did that quite well. And again, from a Jets standpoint, I don't think this could have gone better, because Bridgewater, first of all, you know, showed some competency out there. Now, again, as with Darnold, now I think Bridgewater saw a higher level of competition, but one of his drives was not against the first team Atlanta defense. But all of this said, he showed competency out there. And not only did he show competency, I think the big thing for me is that he took a couple hits. And that above all else, I think, is the question with Bridgewater when we're talking about recovering from his injury. Now, we can evaluate in practice when he's moving, the way he's moving. So we can evaluate the athleticism, you know, to the extent to which it came back. And Bridgewater's game has never been overly reliant on his athleticism. I mean, he's not a big scrambler either. He's a guy who moved well within the pocket. He's a guy who was not a statue back there, but he's never been a big scrambler. And so we could see that in OTAs and training camp. But this was the first chance for other teams to watch, you know, other teams that may be interested in Bridgewater to watch, and also see how he takes a hit, because in practice, quarterbacks are wearing a non-contact jersey. You're not allowed to hit the quarterback. So first chance to see how he responded to taking a hit, and he responded well. And to the extent it's going to raise a guy like Bridgewater's value in a potential trade, I think, you know, certainly you took a step in that direction in this game. And, you know, it's become a topic of debate what happens with Teddy Bridgewater now. And there's a large contingent of the fan base that wants to hold on to Bridgewater. And I understand that argument. I mean, it's not a crazy thing to say. I mean, especially when the Jets have been as starved for good quarterback play as they've been in recent years, that, you know, you have a pretty solid young a guy who's, you know, still pretty young, good track record in the league, and you have a blue chip quarterback prospect. I mean, after all the years of having no quarterbacks, now you have two guys who look pretty good. And I get that. I just think if circumstances were different, I think it would make sense to hold on to Bridgewater. I mean, look, if Bridgewater's on a 2-3 year deal and he's going to be a long-term backup to Darnold, that's a different story, because I value the backup quarterback position quite a bit. But the scenario Bridgewater was signed for no longer exists. He was signed, and it was kind of a marriage of convenience where both sides could provide the other something they needed over the short term. What the Jets needed was a quarterback who could step in there in case, and the Jets were always going to draft a quarterback, but in case the quarterback they drafted wasn't quite ready, you know, if it was maybe a Josh Allen, maybe even Baker Mayfield, or maybe if the Jets fell to the second round and, you know, third round and ended up with a more of a project guy like a Mason Rudolph, Bridgewater was a guy you could put out there and have relative confidence that he was not going to lose the job. He actually could play well enough to sustain the job for 16 weeks and not force you to make a change. And what Bridgewater's looking to do is just audition himself, you know, show that he can still be a starter in this league. And again, if you have a Mason Rudolph on the day two, then maybe you're in a scenario where maybe he fails to launch like Hackenberg did, and then you look at, you buy yourself a second option, you buy yourself a little extra time, you maybe bring Bridgewater back for a second year or a third year if things don't work out. So you're kind of buying yourself an extra option. I just think that scenario went out the door with Darnold, and Bridgewater was signed in part because the Jets never thought they were going to get Sam Darnold. And you can look at the great Sports Illustrated article, if you haven't read it, from a little while back, where they just talk about how much they love Darnold. They thought he'd never fall to them. You know, they never dreamed that a guy like Darnold, who could be ready to play week one, would be available to them, even after they traded up to three. Heck, I remember the day of the draft. I remember thinking, there's no way Darnold actually falls to the Jets. Is there? I remember I was thinking that. So the scenario just changed. And because he's only on a one-year deal, I think Bridgewater's utility to the Jets, if Darnold wins the starting job, falls to about zero. Now, again, if Darnold does not play well against the first team the next couple weeks and shows that, you know, he could use a little bit of time on the bench, then Bridgewater has utility to this team because, again, he's a guy who actually could play well enough that you're not going to feel pressure to put the rookie in. You know, your season's not going to get to that point. But the second Darnold takes over the starting job, Bridgewater's utility to this team falls to close to zero. And, you know, we're talking about him being a backup this year, which, first of all, relies on the contingency of something happening that would force him into the lineup, which is far from a guarantee. Far from a guarantee. So lots of scenarios would play out where he would just have no value to the team. And, you know, even as a backup this year's about Sam Darnold. I mean, if something happened to Darnold after he won the starting job, is the difference between Bridgewater and McCown the difference between the Jets making the playoffs and not making the playoffs? My guess is no. I would have to guess no. But I'll raise you a scenario. Even if it was, going to a wild card round and losing a game there that big of a deal? I mean, what did you really get for the Jets? And I understand they haven't been in the playoffs since 2010. I get that. But this year has really become about Sam Darnold. It's become about advancing Darnold's development. And if Darnold's not part of the picture, this year loses a lot of meaning for the Jets. The Jets have essentially told us that it's not really a playoffs or bust year. Again, it's different if it's a playoffs or bust year and you're trying to maximize what you can get. So I just think that, you know, you look at what Bridgewater provides this year. If he's not if he's the starter, it's one thing. But if he's not the starter, it's a different scenario. And it just, I don't see what value he brings anymore. He was providing value for a different scenario, for a scenario where the Jets did not get Darnold. And it was smart of the Jets. I'll say this: it was smart of the Jets to plan for that scenario, because they couldn't guarantee themselves that they were going to get Darnold. They did not have the number one overall pick. I think it would have been kind of foolish to plan around getting Darnold. You had to prepare for the worst. So listen, I give Mike Maccagnan and the Jets front office credit for planning for that scenario. But now that it's not played out, you look at what's the utility. First of all, he's only here 1 year. And in that year, if Darnold wins the starting job, not a lot of utility there. So you think anything you could get for him on the trade market would be better for the team long term. And I'm presuming, look, if Bridgewater would sign a deal like a 2-3 year deal making McCown money, and he'd buy into the role of being Darnold's backup, absolutely, by all means, keep him around. And again, I'm not saying trade him today, because I think we still do need to see whether Darnold wins the starting job. But in the event Darnold wins the starting job, I think you really do have to look at getting some sort of value for him, because it's essentially a chance to add value to your team by making a deal, getting a pick in return. And I don't know where Bridgewater's value stands in the league at this point. I would imagine performances like Friday only make it didn't hurt what he did Friday. How much did it improve it? Where did it start with? Those things I don't know, but really I think what you can get, if you can get something for him that would be a potential value long term, I think it makes more sense, because Bridgewater's value is almost all in the immediate term because he's only on a 1 year deal. And that immediate term goes out the window because if Darnold wins the job, because you can only play one quarterback at a time, and the year essentially becomes all about Sam Darnold. So that's where I am. But anyway, in any event, really a perfect start from the quarterback position for the Jets. And McCown hit his one pass. It only went 4 yards, but McCown hit his one pass, so good for Josh as well on this as we evaluate this first preseason game. So anyway, we'll talk more about the rest of the preseason game tomorrow. Wanted to get the quarterbacks out of the way today, though, because I think everybody's focused on the quarterbacks. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Have a great Monday. We'll be back again tomorrow.